in St. Louis, Missouri, and I have my co-host, Gene Jackson, all the way from Roll Tide, baby, Roll Tide.
That's right. I'm down here in Coleman, and hopefully I'm still Gene Jackson. Hopefully those nasty Russians didn't steal my identity because I used that app and got a picture of myself looking old. I know that's kept Lance up at night many a nights recently.
Lance is gonna love this. Yeah, he got all pissed. We did a whole Patreon, by the way. It's only $1 Patreon is. About him getting mad. We had a couple things that we got mad at. It's funny what pisses people off. He actually said last night, which won't air. It won't air because we were just talking to somebody, and he said he hates when someone says "bless you." I was like, "Good God!" The things that makes him mad cracks me up. I'm like, we decided, or I decided, and you said, "All right, let's give it a roll." So Raw, it is the Attitude Era, and it is July 20th, 1998. And we're going to decide, was it really that good? Because everybody talks about the Attitude Era, all the workers, all the announcers, anybody, fans. There were so many fans, and you know this, Gene, that become fans because of the Attitude Era.
Oh, yeah. It's looked upon now as the glory days of wrestling, the good old days. And everybody's goal, seemingly, in the past few years is bring back the Attitude Era, bring back the Attitude Era, and... Well, let's take a look at that.
All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and give you a spoiler real quick. Next month, me and Gene are going to sit down and we're going to watch Nitro from the very same night. So there you go. We'll see. Nitro was, see if it was as good as everyone believed it to be and what was going on during that time frame. So Nitro next month, Raw this month, same date, 7/20/1998. If you want to, I watched it off the network. And let's get started. I tell you what, it comes on, it says TVMA. I just never remembered them doing that. Did they do that on USA Network?
Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah, they did.
Did they?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember them doing that. And you know what? I absolutely love this intro with Stone Cold walking through the fire and everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is a super cool intro, no doubt.
And so they come on, Lawler and Jim Ross, and we're 6 days away from pay-per-view Fully Loaded. By the way, I just choose these by random. I just pick a date and we go with it, so we didn't know that. Here's what got me. Number one, I love Lawler and Ross together, always have. But the show starts with Mr. McMahon coming out. Does that look familiar?
Yeah. Yeah, that was indicative of that era for sure. And man, I don't know. Like, I spent most of this show, and I'm becoming more and more aware of this all the time now, of just going, "Oh my God, this was 20 years ago, or it's been that long? Are you serious?"
Me too.
I guess it's a sign of getting old, man.
I got the old calculator out and said, "What? What the fuck? It don't seem that long." Why I say that it started like that? If you watch Raw now, every Raw has been started like that for the last 20 years. Somebody comes out. I was just like, "My God, you know, they were booing him like crazy." Though you don't hear that now.
No, he had mega heat, and oh my God. People who weren't around then just cannot comprehend how over Steve Austin is. And that's not to get ahead of ourselves. I know we'll talk about him later in this show. But good God, man. I mean, when has anybody ever been that over as Stone Cold Steve Austin? Or anybody really had as much heat as Mr. McMahon? It was the ultimate feud in wrestling.
It was a blue collar storyline that the blue collar guy was telling the boss to fuck you, and you can kiss my ass. And it was good with everybody. Everybody that watched it was like Stone Cold, Stone Cold, Stone Cold. But you're right about something. And I know McMahon was great in the role, but when he walks out and they're booing him so loudly, I think that's a huge part of all of this and a huge part of the success is that. That McMahon is a heel. He is a fucking real heel. People cannot stand him. They're booing him. So it made a bunch of sense for him to go against, you know, ever who he was going against made them the top babyface. And Stone Cold was excellent in that role. All right, let's see. We talked about that, but this was all about Kane and Taker and cahoots, and it was kind of weird, all the stuff they were talking about.
Man, I forgot just how convoluted some of this shit was back
Perfect
then.
Perfect word for that.
God almighty, like it was... You, a lot of times you'd have needed a notebook to keep up and make notes of you know, who's mad at who this week and why. And I'll say this. I mean, you know, Russo and people of that era, they certainly tied a lot of things in and crossed over a lot of the storylines. But one quick comment I want to make, going back to something you said a minute ago. One of the reasons, you know, Mr. McMahon was such a great heel, one, because he was the boss and all that, but two, he played it so well. Like, there was no wink and nod to the camera, like, haha, I'm the boss. But, like, he embodied that heel character and did not come out of it. You know, he was Mr. McMahon 24/7. And even outside of WWE, when he would do some of these interviews with, like, Real Sports and different things, he was still that Mr. McMahon character. So you never got a chance to go, like, oh, well, at heart, he really is a good guy. People believed he was a prick through and through, and boy did it pay off you know, at the box office.
It did, and he I think the idea that he might, that was probably a lot of him. He was a prick, and that started in Memphis. You know, he did his first interviews on Memphis television, and as soon as I heard one of his interviews in Memphis, I was like, oh my god, I wish he would do this on a regular basis. You know, we had Triple H coming out with, we had the Nation of Domination, which I think they were just calling them the Nation then. Do an interview, and then we had the match with Triple H with China against D'Lo Brown.
Yes. The big, I don't know why my big takeaway from this match was, it always drove me nuts back then and all the way up till now, that China always would put her hand over the side of their face and then punch her hand was her, is how she threw punches. I hated that. And watching it last night, I told Rosie, I'm like, look at how she punches. God damn it, I hate that.
Everyone who trained her was telling her, you know, you're not going to miss the, you're not going to potato anybody if you put your hand up there. The weird thing was when I didn't really train, but, you know, maybe two or three times a week, no big deal there. But the guy that was training me or helping me gave me the deal where, you know, you punch a and this sounds really stupid what I'm fixing to say. You punch a wall or a brick wall, and then when you start, you'll get good with your punches because you won't want to hit it, you know, kind of thing.
That's how I was taught too. A door frame, actually. So when you can get close enough to where it looks like you hit it, but you don't hurt yourself, you're getting there. And between that and watching tapes of Jerry Lawler and Eddie Gilbert, that was how I learned to punch. And I've been told that I have very nice punches. I don't know.
I've been told the same thing. Someone told me you can't bump worth a shit, but damn, you got good punches. So there we go. At least I got a backhanded comment there. So, well, you know, I had that three-stage bump where I had to be close to the rope. So I grabbed the top rope first, then the second rope, and then the bottom rope, and then fall. So there we go. That was a bump for me.
Is it too late for me and you to have the worst match of all time against each other? Is anybody,
you know,
got
to, honestly, to that as somewhere? Smart as we... Yeah, as smart as we are now with the way psychology is, I think people would be surprised what me and you could do.
It's true.
Because I wouldn't even have to bump, and you wouldn't either, and we'd still get a crowd reaction.
That's true. It'd be fun. It'd be fun for somebody to take us up on that.
Anyone listening, I'll have to get in shape because I get out of breath going to take out the trash now. So there we go. All right, let's talk about this. Something in this match with D'Lo Brown that just got me was that Triple H was green as hell right here. It was like some of the stuff didn't look good at all.
Yeah, and he was, you know, what, probably 4 years in at this point, and I was really surprised how green he looked in this match, knowing how long he'd been around and the spot he was in even at this point. It was kind of shocking. I mean, at times it looked like D'Lo was carrying him through the match.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, he was carrying him through this match. And then they set it up. By the way, they were chanting Rocky Sucks at this time and did a real good loud chant. I was surprised at the ending. So, rock bottom after a bunch of interference, yeah, rock bottom. Not D'Lo didn't do it. The Rock did it on Triple H, and he pinned him. It was supposed to be a double title match coming up Sunday, and they fucked that. The match wasn't too much, you know, wasn't nothing really good. No, none of the traditional yet WWE psychology that WWE actually is well known for now. So that was one of the things. Owen being with them cracks me up. Him being with the Nation, I was just cracking up. All right, so the next thing up was Brawl for It All. So that was one. I know they did a lot of stupid shit, but man, that was a stupid idea. I was all behind it. I was a huge mark, just like Jim Ross for Dr. Death. But man, this was just, it was PCO, by the way.
Yeah.
Which well, I cracked well, up.
We were watching that, and Rosie was kind of, you know, glancing over as she was doing something else, and she looked and she said, "Is that PCO?" And I said, "Yeah." She was like, "God, he looks different." And I said, "Oh, yeah, it was 20 years ago." And she said, "Why does he get the patch on his eye? Because he's a pirate?" I go, "Well, yeah, but he actually, it does, you know, his eye, he is blind in that eye." She's like, "Really?" I was like, "Yeah." She goes, "I didn't know that." I go, "Well, there you go." But man, how that continued on after one or two of those Brawl for All matches, how they didn't just shut that down. I mean, it sounded good in theory, but man, once you saw the very first one, you knew this was just going to be a train wreck. And then not to mention the multitude of injuries that came, and, you know, Dr. Death's career was pretty much shot because of this, you know, Brawl for All. And then, you know, you get, and this is what happens when you shoot, folks. That's the thing. You can have the greatest, because we all know, it's been said, Jim Ross has said, and so many people have said, this was all just a vehicle to get Dr. Death over, and they just assumed he would plow through everybody and win it, and then Bart Gunn, kills everybody and wins the whole damn thing.
That fucking Bart Gunn, I bet if he had to do it over again, he would say, "Okay, dude, we're gonna work this because this ain't gonna do anything for my career or yours if I win," and it didn't. Man, they showed clips also, which was later on, of one of the Harris brothers against Scorpio. That was god-awful, too. It was kind of a great idea, but then you go back to it, you think, so they're saying these are shoots, and everything else is a work. But wait, you know, that's the part I didn't like about it.
Even back then, that was my big issue with it, and that was my big, I don't know, that was like a Russo thing in general. Like, you know, he loved to do these moments, both when he was in WWF and WCW, where, you know, you do this something shocking and you would have the announcers basically say, "Oh my God, that was real. That wasn't supposed to happen." So in turn, you've said everything else on this show is just fake, phony bullshit. And not to sound like Cornette or something, but it took you, I mean, you got a 2-hour show and now you've been convinced that 2 minutes of it was real. Well, you're kind of there with your dick in your hand now for the rest of the show. It was like, all right, well, you basically just acknowledge all the rest of this is crap. Just terrible in general. But I love the fact that I'm sure once it was all over with, they're like, well, okay, well, at least we got a star in Bart Gunn. We can play him up to be this badass. And then Butterbean kills him at WrestleMania. So the whole thing was just a fart, you know, in church when it was all said and done. It got nothing out of it.
Horrible idea. Jim Ross, thank you a lot for that one, dumbass. That's probably what they were saying. So up next was Val Venus. Let me tell you. Now, I do know that this is the Attitude Era, and it is R-rated, but this just made me feel uncomfortable. And I'm not a guy that, you know, that's easily offended, but we first got Wally Yamaguchi's wife was given Venus head, Val Venus head, and so he was going to punish her. By the way, Wally Yamaguchi was huge deal in Japan at one time because of the Gong magazine. He was big deal with Gong magazine. I actually think I have correspondence with him somewhere when he was just pretty much working Gong magazine and I was supplying photographs for people. I was like, is that Wally? And I had to go back and look to make sure. But then Wally's going to spank his wife with this huge ass paddle before Venus makes the save.
His tie tied around his head like a like a headband of some sort. But yeah, like you said, this is one of those things that does not age well at all. And it's like, man, this passed for wrestling on a wrestling angle back in 98. Just one big, long, uncomfortable, strange segment, to say the least. But, I mean, you know, we had a porn star wrestler. So what are you going to do with a porn star wrestler? He's going to bang somebody's wife. Well, I mean, how do you not?
I guess, man, that was tough to watch. And, I'm all about let's do something, cutting edge. But, damn. Next up was Ellering. And I'm just going to be honest. I don't remember him being with the Harris Brothers. He's with the Harris Brothers. They're supposed to wrestle Skull versus Animal. And then Animal's looking for Hawk. And I'm cracking up. I'm going, they're saying, where's Hawk? Well, Hawk's backstage fucked up, probably. That's what I'm thinking. And then when Hawk does run out, he does look fucked up. They're beating him down. They beat both of them down, and they didn't move or anything.
Well, you know, in 88, Paul Ellering turning on Hawk and Animal would have been a huge deal, and you would still remember it now. However, in 98, when he turned on LOD and went with the Harris Brothers, kind of forgettable. And this is when they were making that whole angle out of Hawk's demons, if you will, which eventually led to him climbing to the top of the Titantron and falling off a little while down the road. And again, just more just distasteful attitude era bullshit, you know, or let's make an angle out of the fact that Hawk has a drug addiction and let's make a soap opera of it on TV. And it made just for some really uncomfortable moments. And this was kind of the beginnings of that.
Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial and we'll be right back and we'll have the second part here. Back from commercial. No shout outs today. We went about 17 minutes on that side, a little bit longer than me and Gene usually go. That's what she said. What came out next was Tennessee Lee, Robert Fuller, with Jeff Jarrett wrestling Blackman. The Godwins were with them. That was the Godwins, right?
Yes, that was.
Yeah.
That was the Godwins. Southern Justice.
That's right. You're right. They Shamrock and Severn came out with him after because they had so many people out there. Came out with Blackman. Blackman was green as hell, but you know Jeff did a good job walking him through a match.
Yeah, he did. I mean,
except the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a tribute to what a worker Jeff is that this was even somewhat, you know, passable as a match. But, man, you talk about a black hole of charisma. Steve Blackman and Dan Severn and Shamrock. Shamrock has a little bit, but, man, them as a trio is just everything that Jeff Jarrett and Robert Fuller aren't.
It was just night and day there. I always was a huge Shamrock fan, and I thought they missed the boat on the guy and not doing what they could have done with him. There's all kinds of podcasts out there that goes through the whole Shamrock thing, but they did. Everything just looked really weird. That finish, I don't know. I really don't know what it was or what happened or Jeff. What it felt like was that somebody said, look, I need 5 minutes. So go out there, do 5 minutes. And, you know, and then someone told Jeff, go to the finish. And Jeff just... Jeff just laid there. See you later, bye. But you're right, man. Robert Fuller and Jeff just when it comes to charisma, especially even Fuller to the day still has it. So, Then we get Undertaker walking out the building, which is just so weird to me that they're following the Undertaker and he's leaving the building. And he's not going to be back because of all this stuff that they wonder if he's in cahoots with Kane and Mankind. But he says he's not going to fight them in a handicap match, which we didn't even cover earlier. But they were supposed to fight him in a handicap match. He's done. He's not fighting them in a handicap match. And we have this is at the point to where the second hour starts for Raw. And we have Stone Cold.
What? I think it's funny the Undertaker who won't appear at the Hall of Fame banquets because he doesn't want to be seen in that light or humanized or whatever. If you go back and look at all the silly shit he was involved in during the Attitude Era, stuff like this, like why would the Undertaker be walking out to avoid a a handicap match, and just, I don't know, all that. Again, the only word you can really apply to it, convoluted. But Stone Cold comes out, and all is right with the world as far as the WWE fans are concerned. Again, just over as hell. It didn't matter what he said or did. They loved it.
Just, I mean, I even popped for this. I love the McMahon Stone Cold stuff. The crowd just going nuts. The crowd, I mean, just, oh, just crazy. I know Hogan. I went back and looked at some Madison Square Garden stuff. There's a Madison Square Garden Hogan. I think it's Hogan Hulk from Madison Square Garden stuff. But the crowd is just in a fucking frenzy when they're talking about a match with Hogan. And it feels that way here. Stone Cold was not part of the business for a long time. But have you ever noticed that when they do that sale on Pro Wrestling Tees and then they release who sold the most T-shirts, that I don't think the Young Bucks have beat Stone Cold but one time.
Yeah, he's the all-time undisputed king of selling T-shirts, that's for sure.
Man, and it's crazy.
And what's crazy is I think if through that entire era after he got injured, if Steve Austin could have never wrestled another match, as long as he'd have came out every week, cut a promo, drank beer, and stunned somebody, he would have stayed over and been the top guy for years to come without ever even having a match, because that was like the least of what he did that anybody cared about.
You're right. That's true. McMahon said that since Undertaker was not going to do the handicap match, that he had to do the handicap match, or he was going to have to forfeit the title. So we're promoting the rest of the show. Stone Cold's going to be in the main event against Mankind and Kane. We had a quick segment with Jason Sensation, which I always liked him. He was really good. But Owen slaps him and puts him in a sharpshooter, which I loved. I loved that. Owen then gets in a match against Farooq Ron Simmons. Dude, Owen is so good. I mean, he is so good. The crowd was really loud at one point, and they were yelling Nugget at him. I mean, loud. Absolutely, like, he's the most over guy, you know, ever.
Yeah, that Nugget thing really really caught on, you know, after, what was it, Triple H made the remark that, you know, he's what was left when you flushed the Hart Foundation down the toilet. He was that nugget of shit that wouldn't go down.
Right,
and fans
right.
chanted Nugget at him for years after that. But yeah, Owen, I mean, he was really good in this role, especially. He was super talented at anything he ever did. But man, I think this is something when people talk about, you know, his work and things he did in the business, I think it's overlooked a lot of times how good he was in this role with the Nation of Domination.
I loved it. He was just out of place, and that's what made it good. This match with Farooq was still a little green, and Farooq was always just looked like he was killing everybody. Then Shamrock came out to chase Owen. I thought it was hilarious that he had to slow down after they went into the crowd. And he was Shamrock was like slowing down just a little bit. We got a quick glimpse of Paul Bearer, Mankind, and Kane in an interview. Then we went with Mark Merrill and Jackie, Miss Jackie. Man, does Miss Jackie sound Southern or what?
Oh my God. Me and my friends used to get the biggest kick out of Jackie whenever she'd talk on WWF, or she seemed to get more mic time in WCW around that time. And oh my God. Yeah, there were like lines from Jackie we would quote. Like she said, I said, what was it on Nitro one night? She said, I asked her about Deborah, and she said, Deborah got legs like a chicken. And for years, my friend Mike, anytime we'd ever go anywhere to eat chicken or something, he'd go, Miss Deborah got legs like a chicken. And for some reason, whenever you mention Jacqueline, that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And I don't mean that in any sort of racist or inappropriate way. It's just something she said on Nitro that stuck in my head.
Oh, man, she's just so country. We had Sable come out and look like a maternity dress, and we knew it was coming off. You know,
yeah.
Sable was fucking over. We all know that. But there was just really nothing. She just looked like the typical big booby blonde. And I know that people say, well, she was hot. I'm just like, she did absolutely nothing for me. But she was over as hell. And Jerry Lawler was, He used to get on my nerves doing the way he reacted, but I actually liked it this time because you don't ever hear anything like that. But his voice goes up like that, and I liked his reaction. So, but not a huge.
Sable always struck me as like somebody's hot mom. Like, she wasn't like a hot chick, but it's just like if that was like your friend's mom, like, hey, your friend's mom's hot. But she was just right. Always older looking to me. It wasn't like if you put her next to Sonny or somebody like that, to me, he's like, oh, there's no comparison. Like, Sonny's 100 times hotter. But I never got why everybody was so fanatical over Sable, but I thought I was the only one. So I guess that's something else we share in common.
Yeah. Just not a. I could see the appeal and I could see why she was over, but I wasn't attracted to her. So speaking of people I was attracted to, I mean, HBK came out. Man, oh, he was fucking over too. I hated that fucking haircut he had, but he was over. Just so fucking over. I know, talking about things you hate. I hated the haircut. And I didn't like what he was wearing. Look, before he went out, I would have dressed him different, and I would have told him, let the hair grow out. But he was fucking over, too. I mean, the whole crowd was going nuts. He came out to do commentary.
Yeah, definitely not, from top to bottom, definitely not one of his better looks. for sure, but man, to this day, one of the greatest wrestlers to ever step in the ring. There's no disputing that.
I wish I didn't know all the shit that all the people put out about him on shoot interviews now, because I was a huge mark for him. And you can't take away any of the matches he had, but every time I see him come out and everything, I'm thinking, yeah, what a prick. You know, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Next, we had The Rock and DX, Nation and DX doing like this pull apart crazy brawl to set up a commercial break, really, to set up a match coming up with X-Pac and Rocky. Crowd was chanting, Rocky sucks. They showed a clip where X-Pac had to actually pin Rocky the week before or 2 weeks before that. You know what? Dude, I love this match.
It was a really good match, and one of the few matches that I've seen from this time period from Raw that still holds up. Because, like you said, there really wasn't a lot of psychology then. It's very most of the matches you'll see on any of the Raws from this era, and even the pay per views, but especially the Raws, are very different from anything you've known before or since. But this match, yeah, it was a good one. And like I say, it still holds up. You can compare it to things from recent times, and it still
holds up. Man, it was a lot of near falls. You thought it was over a couple times. I mean, I popped for a couple of finishes. I thought, this is it. But this match, if you don't do anything, go back and watch this match. Really good. And I saw something that surprised the hell out of me. Number one, Rock wasn't that good here. He was good, but he wasn't that good. But X-Pac put him through a really good match, but Rock was calling almost the whole match. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and that was very surprising. Very surprising.
I was too. I was shocked. I was like, okay, X-Pac walk him through a good match, but I kept watching. The Rock was calling almost every bit of it. Crowd was so hot during this. It just loud. And all the pops for when they were supposed to be. It was an excellent match, and it would stand up. You could put this match on Raw right now, those two guys, and the place would go crazy. X-Pac was just a hard fucking worker. I mean, he just at a pace that most people, you know, couldn't keep up with him. So
he's very underrated, and I hope at some point he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame on his own outside of DX, because he really deserves it. And, you know, you talk about, like, shoot interviews. I've come to realize over the years, you know, Sean Waltman's one of the very first people they would have guys work with in WWE during a long stretch there to test and see if they knew how to work. If they couldn't go out, if Sean Waltman couldn't get a good match out of them, they probably weren't getting signed. And that says a lot. And to that note, seeing Rock calling the match still is just kind of baffling.
It was. Trivia, BT trivia. I actually went to Minnesota when spring break, which was a dumbass idea because it snowed. But I got to commentate a Jerry Lynn Lightning Kid match with my friend who's no longer with us, Ray Webby. And I can't remember the name of the promotion in Minnesota, but I got to sit down and do it. And it was a, just a fantastic, crazy match. But when you look at him and the way he's, you know, well, he's 26 at this point, I think is what they said. Two stars right there. They come off as stars, X-Pac and Rock do. And that's something we really, really miss in the business. I do. I don't see a lot of people that I feel they are stars. And you had a lot of them on this show. You know, I mean, a lot of people felt like, you know, HBK, Stone Cold. And I know people say, well, they were stars. But no, it was the feeling. They were somebody special. So next we had 7 minutes left, and I said, this is going to be a clusterfuck. And that's pretty much what it was. Kane and Mankind were supposed to be – it wasn't a tag match. It was against Austin. Crowd was so hot for this. Austin was – man, he kills me with his bumping. He will bump out of the ring and, like, roll. And I mean, I love it, but it's all over the place. It's not what you're getting taught in, you know, wrestling school.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Crowd was hot. Taker finally came out. Taker hit Austin with the chair. And then Austin ended up getting – did he hit – he tried to hit Austin with the chair, but he hit Kane, right?
Yeah, Austin moved and he hit Kane.
And then
off the DQ.
Yeah. And then Austin got mad and hit everyone with the chair and left.
Yeah.
So he's supposed to be. It was what was it supposed to be a tag match coming up Sunday with Taker and Austin against Kane and Mankind.
Yeah, another of that hard to follow crap because you know you had a tag match already scheduled, but now you're going to have a handicap match with two against one of the guys that were already in the match. But then he leaves, so now you've got a handicap match against the other guy. But if Austin leaves, they'll strip him of the belt and just give it to The Undertaker, who's his partner on Sunday. Who in the hell could begin to follow the logic of any of that stuff? It's, ugh.
It was crazy. It was that stuff right there is I just don't ever remember it being so convoluted, as you say. Man, that's a good word for us Southern folks, you know.
The word of the day.
Word of the day right there. All right, Gene, I got to ask you, was it really that good?
Oh, man. This of all the episodes of shows we've watched from all time periods, this is the hardest one to answer that question because there's moments like Rock and X-Pac and, you know, things that made it really good. Then there's moments like the Brawl for All fights and just the silliness of a lot of these stipulations and the stories that makes it not really that good. So is there a thumbs in the middle? Is there a it was really okay, I can say, or do I have to go good or bad?
I feel the same way you do, but I think because I think there's a lot of stuff like if you took this episode and you took it to somebody to learn about how to get things over and things to not do, I kind of like a teaching tool, you know, we can't do this. Some of that stuff may, like I said, that stuff with the Japanese girl was just, and then, you know, other stuff. And he just, my takeaway was I really enjoyed it because the last part of the show, I would have left with the last part of the show thinking, man, that was good. Now, some of the other stuff, not. So I'm going to say, yeah, it was watchable and I had a good time with it. But it all had to do with Rock and X-Pac probably. And then the end with Stone Cold, you know, kicking ass with a chair.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff I liked. There was some moan, you know. Why are they doing this? What the hell is this all about? Kind of, but yeah. Compared to what we watch now, this is still 10 times better. And there was, you know, 2 times the amount of people watching it or more. And I can understand why because they had so many stars on the show.
Yeah, overall it was pretty good. It's just I don't know. I was so excited when I got the network and was going to go back and start watching some of this, and I find myself watching less and less and less of things from the Attitude Era than I do any other time period, because in my mind, it just, I don't know, it doesn't hold up. I just don't enjoy watching it as much as I do other things, and I'm really excited that you picked the Nitro from the same night, because I really look forward to watching that show and us being able to discuss how the two shows compared, and I don't remember there being as much far-fetched and oddness in Nitro at the time, but perhaps it was, and it may, or maybe it just seemed less because of Raw, but I'm looking forward to next month's show as well.
That's right. We'll be doing that in August. Guys, same bad time, same bad channel on the best little wrestling podcast in the business. Be there! And as Gene knows, I love my mama.
Indeed. Thank you, Gene.